Welcome to this episode of the UTalk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I'm Joseph Silverzweig. How is everybody doing today?
Good, good. You're all doing great. It's a beautiful spring day. Maybe won't snow again. I don't know. It's still April. We'll probably get one more.
I saw snow in the forecast.
Oh, man. It's just so crazy.
But outside of the common casualty conversation of weather, let's give you an idea of what we're going to talk about. Of course, we're going to hit the quick hitters and the Kuzma watch, talk about what the other sports are doing. We're going to talk some gymnastics. As much as we may not be experts, we do have some takes. And then we're going to get into some basketball, talk about the season in review. John Wilner made some picks as far as the Utes being eighth next year, and talk about where we think the Utes will be next year. So it should be a good episode. But as always, quick reminder, please go give us reviews. Please give us feedback. We would love emails at utalk@gmail.com or any tweets, DMs at us. Let us know what we can do better. Let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about as the off season hits. You know, we're going to bring in other sports. We've got some ideas in the works, but we'd love to hear what you want to hear about. But otherwise, let's get into it. So, Kyle Kuzma watch.
Kuzma. I'm glad my sounder is back. It's force. Although,
your sounder is going to end.
This is the last echo of Kuzma that you guys will hear for a while. I don't know if the Kuzma watch will be back on when he's just second year guy.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe we just need to do a Utes in the NBA watch is what we'll do next in NBA season.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea because Pirtle and, Wright are also having pretty darn good seasons and breaking in. And
well, you probably didn't know this, Joseph, but they are the key two key components of Toronto's bench, which is one of the highest production benches in the NBA. So they're doing
definitely
good.
Definitely did not know that.
So,
but it's interesting.
All right, so Kuzma, minutes are down.
Zero. They're down to zero.
Yeah. And why is that, Joseph?
Sore ankles. They're both sore. He says it's hard to play on two flat tires. Lakers are out of it. So it looks like they may be putting our boy Kuz on the shelf for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, those sore ankles are not that sore. It's just time to shut it down.
He's tired. He's worn out. Although, ankles can be an issue, but there are exercises you can do to make him stronger. Maybe that's something he can work on in the off season.
But assuming he doesn't play anymore, I don't know if they've had their last game. I think the last game is really today.
Yeah, they have 81, so they've got one.
Oh, okay. So,
Clippers
ultimately
tonight.
All right. He, over the season, you know, it's worth review, averaged 31 minutes, 16 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and almost a block a game. So really good rookie campaign.
36% from 3. I mean, you get block per game and 36% from 3. That tells you he's doing everything you want.
I can't lie. I see that, and I think, why couldn't he shoot that well?
I guess being further away and the more open spacing made a big difference. Or it could just be he had 8 hours a week to practice because he had to go to class. And now he can just go home and jack
basketball
up threes, 300 threes a day. And he just didn't have time for that until his pre-draft offseason. I mean, I think people don't realize how little practice time is available to college athletes. It's strictly limited by the NCAA, and it's not impossible, certainly, to practice on your downtime, but you don't have a lot of downtime. You got a full credit load, got all your classes you got to do, and the coaches expect a lot, and you're probably, you know, pretty tired after practice and things like that. Yeah, so frustrating, but I think maybe serves as a reminder of just how hard it is to be a student athlete and to be forgiving when the left tackle misses a block or the wide receiver runs the wrong route. They've got a lot on their minds. That's all
right.
Well,
Daddy Joe here protecting his kids.
Yeah,
be nice to my kids.
All right.
Well, let's talk about the other sports. So, going on in the Olympic sports here, we got men's tennis is playing Washington. Baseball's at UCLA.
Baseball seems to have been going pretty well. What's their early record here?
I have a feeling by the noise of your typing keys, we're
yep.
going to assume.
Yep. Clickety click click.
I will also say we've got some men's golf in Arizona, track and field in Logan against Utah State. And then what our fans and listeners probably really want is the red and white game is this weekend at 11.
Oh, no. Who is this? Oh, no. They're not good. They're not good, guys. They're 9-22. So let's stop talking about that. Move on.
Your feelings have been hurt. I understand.
I follow them on Twitter, and occasionally they're like, so-and-so, Grand Slam, well, you won. And they never talk about, you know, the losing.
The win-loss.
Not like, oh, another error. We lost by 7 to Cal. So it feels like they're doing a little better than they are, but good for them for trying, you know.
Yeah. All right, so let's to finalize. I mean, we've been talking gymnastics as part of the quick hitters, but this is not going to be super quick today.
Yeah, I mean, it's really time to talk gym. We've got regionals are done. I mean, this is the big dance right now for the gymnasts.
Yeah. Now they're preparing for, what is it technically called? The championships, right? So you have the first round this week,
mm-hmm.
And then you earn your spot. So they have two of these groups of six, and the top three from each go on, and that's your Super Six.
And
which
they
is
won
the
their regional,
title.
Which we were going to talk about last week, but unfortunately my work schedule killed our recording session. That's my fault, not Grant's fault. But they won regionals, which is great, and now nationals are coming. But you were saying, Grant, their group is brutal. Like
it's a pretty tough group. So let's just go over that, and we'll give rankings too. Matter of fact, let me do some quick mouse work here. All right, so if I knew how to operate my computer, hold on. It's a good production right here. Okay, so the Utes are going against Oklahoma. They have Oklahoma, Florida, Kentucky, Washington, California.
Jeez. How many of those
Oklahoma
are the top 10?
Is number one.
Yeah.
Florida is number four.
Jeez.
California is 9. Kentucky is 8. And Washington is 11.
So all but one are top 10
yeah.
opponents.
Yeah, and
that's
so,
brutal.
Well, I mean, first of all, we pretty much hit the semifinals. Like, these are going to be
good. Everybody's
teams,
good.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, expect it to not be good. It does kind of stink to be going against Oklahoma and Florida, who are currently ranked against above the Utes. So you've got, you know, potentially little wiggle room to get into that Super Six. I mean, just to give you an idea, but I guess now I'm looking at it, I should correct myself a little bit. So Utah is ranked 5th. They're averaging about 197.36. So we're going to just say 197.4. And, you know, Kentucky is the next team that they're going against as far as rankings go. And they're averaging 196.1. So there's some room there. The Utes should, in my opinion, get to that Super Six, but you know, a little bit more difficult competition. Really need to be hitting their stride right now.
Yeah, and that's they've been trying to do that from the get-go of this season, kind of taking it easy,
yeah.
upping the ante and the energy as they went forward. And I think you can kind of see that progression in their scores. They had that late season bump with that 198, 105. and other good scores. Let me look here. I'm looking at the format. It looks like...
Are you looking for the rotation?
So there's a play-in on the first day, and the Utes are not in the play-in. And
yeah,
then
I don't know
on the
about
second
this,
day, eight teams will compete in two sessions of four. So it's those kind of round-robin things that you see where there's four teams. And the top two in each of those sessions advance to the third and final day. So you'll go from eight. You have the two play-in, it's like the first out in the tournament, and then that leaves you with the eight, and then the eight turns into four, and then the four turns into two, and that happens on both ends of the bracket, and your finals will have four teams. It's a new system. So, yeah, we change from the, let's see, only eight teams advance down from the 12 used in the current Super Six. I'm just reading off the Tribune's article from last year.
So is this... Oh, okay.
So this is new. This is brand new this year, and it looks like it's a little different. I don't know who the play-ins are. I don't think it'll be Utah because they're top five. But it looks like there's two groups of 10 that eventually turn into four. To two groups of two, and that's your final over the course of a 3-day semi.
So I think that change has been talked about based on my knowledge is that is not happened yet.
Gosh, where's
based
where's
on
our gymnast when we need her?
Yeah, so let me just say this. So the way it's working based on the Utes press release.
Well, that's going to be right? That's going to be correct. Oh,
not
my
to say I went straight to the source, Joseph.
Oh, boy. You should have stopped me like 5 minutes ago.
Sorry,
she said, press release, Joe. Press release. Oh,
so,
shut up.
Six teams, you know, 12 teams, six teams.
Okay,
so
never mind.
Three from each go up, and that's your Super Six, and that's your national final. So,
awesome. That's the same. So why did they tell me they lied?
Maybe that's the change they're talking about, but that is not the change for this year.
I'm sorry, everybody. I led you astray, and I wasted our valuable recording minutes.
So, either way, Super Six, they should finish top three. Depending on what the other teams do, and the Utes, of course, you know, could be tighter than we'd like, but I'd love to see them get up into that top three and get to the Super Six. I will see one thing that's going for the Utes is they got what is called the Olympic rotation, which is the rotation you would prefer, especially for the Utes, right? They start with vault, which is one of their best events.
Mm-hmm.
They have a bye. They go to bars, which is a great event for the Utes. They get beam over with. Personally, I can't stand watching beam.
And it's their worst event. Is that accurate? They're good at everything there. One of the best teams in the country.
Right.
But I feel like
they're top five.
Floor and vault are their strong events. It doesn't break it down. There's not a lot of stats out there.
Yeah, so, I mean, they are
field.
They are a top team either way. But Beam, I can't stand watching Beam because it's just nervous. I mean, one little wobble on that, like, 4-inch beam or however wide it is.
Unless
like
you're UCLA.
Yeah. Oh, true. Then it's, you wobble, Joseph, you get a 10. but they finished, the great thing is the Utes finished on the floor, and they rock at the floor.
They've got two of the best floor performers in the nation, in Stover and Skinner. So,
yeah,
they're in really good shape there.
You know, if we could get the Utes, you know, the Utes hit a, let's see here, their high score this year was 198.1. You know, if we could get close, that high 197 stuff, like they're a contender,
mm-hmm.
not only just in the Super Six, but to contend for the title. So, I mean, we'll see. It should be good. I'm glad they got the good rotation. I wish we weren't going against Oklahoma in this Super Six, the regional, but we'll see. The other gymnastics news to talk about, and I didn't know this earlier, is apparently there are two signing periods for gymnastics recruiting. Uh-huh. And they signed Cammie Hall from Virginia. If you know me, I grew up in Virginia, so I'm very excited to have a fellow Virginian come into the University of Utah. But, you know, so Cammie Hall, welcome. Welcome to the Utah family. And she's joining the early commits that were in November, which is Crystal Issa, Adrian Randall, and Hunter. I'm horrified I'm saying this last name wrong. But Dula.
Right? Just Dula, like medulla oblongata.
I think
our new gymnast is the first, and I could be wrong, there's a lot of due diligence to do here, but I think the first African-American Utah gymnast. So it's cool to be bringing some diversity into a sport where there's not a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it is great.
Nice to see. Echoing the very diverse football team in particular, I think, is among the most diverse teams in the country.
Yeah, for sure. But hey, always excited to add more to the Utah family, and we'll see what happens.
See what you can do.
Yeah. So let's talk some basketball. You know, we missed the real time to review the season last
week. That's my fault. I did so bad today. I missed last week. I'm talking about an imaginary championship. I am way off my game. You guys are just going to bear with me. I'll get back into the swing here. Don't worry. I will recover. I've got some sore ankles right now, but I'm going to rest them, and I'll be back.
Okay, so with your sore ankles, was this basketball season a success or a failure?
I think it was a success. I mean, I'm firmly in the Larry K apologist group. I'm really happy with him. I realize people want more, but and you know what I think it is at its core? It's how much basketball has changed from the youth's glory days in the 50s to now. And being a new Utah fan, I mean, I'm a New Yorker originally, so this whole Utah thing is only about, 20 years old for me now. And being a Utah fan is maybe 10, 15 years old for me. So I'm really disconnected from the glory days of Utah basketball. And I came in to being a Ute fan, and I saw a program that had no institutional or structural advantages, even in the Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving to the Pac-12, that became even more of an issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, with football, you kind of have this weird advantage with Polynesian players that everybody from Coach Hill up to Witt has been able to really take advantage of, but there's no similar structural systemic advantage that you can take advantage of. There's no reason for Utah to be a better basketball team than Oregon State, and yet they are consistently, substantially better than other teams, quote unquote, like Utah, that you'd expect Utah to perform at year in, year out. And I think you see that in the media predictions. You see bottom half predictions almost every year, and they always exceed that. And there's a reason they're getting those bottom half predictions. They don't have a ton of talent.
Okay.
And in this environment, I don't see that changing, and I don't really see how you can kind of upset that system. And as long as the Utes are fun to watch and competitive, and there's an outside shot at doing something special, and then every few years, you know, they put it together, which I hope next year will be. So I would say it was a success. I've always looked at this season as sort of putting in the superstructure for a better team next year. I know we're losing a lot, but I feel like
that's going to create room for some of this new dynamic talent, hopefully make an impact. And next year, my expectations are going to be pretty high, and the year after that, even higher.
Interesting.
But this year, I had set my bar for success much lower than the Utes actually achieved. That NIT run was exciting and fun. I mean, this season I was like, can I have fun watching this team play basketball? And I did. I had a lot of fun. The Arizona games were great. The Arizona State games were great. The NIT was a blast. It was fun. I had a good time, and there was a lot to like. And I'm happy with it. Yeah. So bring the hammer down, Grant.
Well,
smash the mic.
Was it a success? If your definition of success is overachieving what I think everyone's start of season expectations were, then yeah, they totally overexceeded. Was it a failure? I mean, not to sit on a fence, but I think there's some validity to the argument that they didn't make the NCAA tournament, so is it a success or failure, especially for these youths when they were just a couple games away from doing that? Like, I feel like there might have been a mistake in the scheduling, and that's where, you know, you get your Larry K hate and love from people. Is he a great coach? Sure, definitely. I mean, you can't look at this season's successes and not say he's a great coach, but you know, him working with Hill and making this schedule, you know, that definitely leaves some to be desired.
Yeah. And I could start off next season disappointed if the schedule, the non-con schedule next year, is reflective of this year, similar in terms of projected, you know, RPI and rankings and things. I'm already disappointed because you have to play some teams they can beat. And in a meaningful way. So
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
What still is out there for them to schedule.
But so there's my success or failure take. What's interesting is expectations for next year, right? You said your expectations are coming in a little high as of right now. And, you know, John Wilner, Mercury News, you all, if you listen to this podcast, you've probably read something.
Noted Ute hater. He's not a Ute hater, but he likes to talk about the Utes and isn't a Ute fan, which is pretty unusual in national media.
Mm-hmm.
And so his more moderate takes on the Utes are sometimes seen as pretty negative, even though it's pretty mainstream, I think.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, so he's already kind of, you know, forecast it for next season, and he's picking the Utes to finish 8th in the Pac-12. Now, I've already seen the counter arguments, and I can't own this because I didn't argue it. There's some validity to it, but is that the Utes are consistently typically a top 4 or a top half of this league team. Like, the performance is there. After the rebuild, they've clearly been able to handle things. So the Utes have overperformed in that sense, but I think Wilner, I think he's on to something personally. The Utes are losing, you know, technically 4 seniors because the assumption is that Connor's going to transfer to a graduate transfer. But so losing Ross and Collette and Bibbins, I think, are really monumental losses.
Bibbins is huge.
Now,
Collette,
I'll say,
there's just nobody tall on the team.
Well,
who I trust.
So I'm going to start with the easy one to replace, in my opinion, right? And I caveat this in that this player is a big role, was a big part of this team, but I think the talent is already behind him to replace it, and it's Tyler Rawson. You know,
yeah.
Donnie Tillman is sitting there ready to go.
And is as good, if not better. And I think the ceiling is clearly higher.
His ceiling's higher. And I think, you know, continue to get coached up. He can take that role. So, you know, bingo. Sorry, Rawson. I love you, man. But I kind of already put Tillman into that slot. Your next one, in my opinion, is Bibbins. Right.
He's a really special player, and it's a tragedy being on him for a year.
All that stuff. I will say this, though. Of that guard leadership, I feel like Barefield is there.
I would agree with that. Like, the question is if the shooting will be there without having both of them on the floor and the ability to go with a hot hand.
And we've got some recruits that are coming in that are supposed to be pretty good shooters. So I'm actually not all that worried about the guard position is personally. The one I'm worried about, and obviously why I save him for last, is David Collette. There's something to be said for a player that, one, he played good while defense. While defense is not jump up and swat it, which he did plenty of times, but while defense is getting your hands straight up and making it hard
just
for them to shoot it.
Just be
right?
able to pin the ball.
Yeah, and he did a great job at that. The other thing, with how good of a field goal percentage it was, Collette could get shots. I've been saying this a lot through the end of the basketball season. If the team needed a bucket, they could go to Collette. And he was there, and he was going to get a good high percentage field goal, and he's going to make it most times. You'd get your bucket to stem the flow of a run
right.
or a scoring drought, whatever it might be, but he would do that. And that is my problem with the Utes of 2018. Where is that coming from? Chase Johnson has not proven that he can
not at
do
all.
That. He hasn't
but,
shown that.
But development of bigs is the calling card of Chris Kolbiak's team, so I'm hopeful. But I would agree with that, though. There's a lack of size and a lack of talent at size on the current or the projected Utes roster, and I don't see any way that can change meaningfully from now to 2018 unless there's some, crazy transfer or something that happens. But that's not reasonable to project.
Right. So, I mean, we can go downer, right, and say I don't see it. I don't see it from Jace, unfortunately. I would love to say he's going to make some kind of jump his junior year, red shirt junior year. But I think the only real hope to get that kind of post-scoring or that scoring big is probably in Riley Batten, who is going to be coming in as a freshman. And this is where I...
But how big is Batten?
Well,
what's
he listed according to Rivals, he's a 6'8 with 240.
Yeah, but that's going to... I mean, he's going to show up and he's going to be 6'7, 6'6 and a half. You know,
well,
that's
sure,
the way these
but,
things work.
I mean, that's the hard part with this team, right? Like, so there's one thing about basketball that's fun about it, and the reason you look at recruiting in basketball, in my opinion, is one player can make a significant difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
The hard part is it's still just as unpredictable. Jace Johnson was a four-star recruit, and we were all super excited when he signed with the Utes and came even early and redshirted that first year. But what is that translated to? I don't.
So far, nothing. Nothing.
I mean, he's been a solid role player.
You know, a couple. You know what's nice though is his efficiency in terms of minutes played is not good, but he's taking good shots, and in his minutes, he's getting good rebounds and blocks. So I think that the stats suggest that he has some of those traits that Collette has. Certainly there's technique issues, and I think he just isn't physical enough. I mean, Collette's kind of a bruiser down there and willing to throw some elbows and things. I don't feel like Johnson has displayed that, but I'm hopeful. I'm less down on Johnson than you are, though I agree definitively he hasn't yet proven it, but that doesn't mean he won't do it. I call it like a coin flip that he'll ably fill Collette's role.
Right.
And of course, that's all barring injury, an ankle gives out or something.
Sore ankles.
Sore ankles, man. Look out for those sore ankles.
They're dangerous. But, so, I have have nothing wrong with the Wilner pick of the eighth. Do I think the Utes have the ability to finish in the top four? Sure, but I also don't have a ton of trust to say a freshman, of all the freshmen coming in or the JC transfers, that they're going to be such game-changing transfers as Bibbins was, for example.
That's very unique to have a guy walk in out of JUCO and just take over a team like that. I mean, he was absolutely the leader of the team by the end of that NIT run, and that's not something you see. I mean, coaches know when a player is going to be good in basketball. It's not hard to tell, and it's really unusual to have a top-level P5 talent like Bibbins available at JUCO, and I think he was people literally looked right over him because he's I think he's listed at 5'8", but I've stood next to the guy, and I'm generously giving myself 5'8", and I'm taller than he is. So he's little, and I think that maybe drove interest down. But, I'm with you. I'm worried about bigs. We've always been worried about bigs. We kept waiting. They'll get one. They haven't really. I mean, the class has some bigger guys, but, you know, that genuine long arm 6'10 plus guy in the paint, they didn't really sign one.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But, you know, is what it is at this point. I think we'll all get more expectations as we get to see these guys maybe in some preseason tournament or something like that, and we'll see. But overall, I guess both of us are great. The Ute Talk podcast is grading the season as a success.
Yeah, maybe like a B rather than an A.
Yeah,
good.
I like it.
Good.
All right. So that's it we got for you. As a tease, is next week or the week after, we want to talk about local media coverage of the Utes, Pac-12 coverage. How's the Pac-12 network working out?
Bad. It's bad. How's my professional opinion?
How should Commissioner Scott be treated as
fired.
Far as his employment?
He should be fired.
Hey, we're trying to tease it, not.
I'm teasing it. I'm teasing them by telling them exactly what I'm going to say, but they don't know why.
All right. Well,
that's a tease.
So, with that being said, let us know if there's specific questions or things that you want us to talk about in regards to media coverage, whether it's the way the Utes are covered here locally, whether it's the Pac-12 network, whatever it is, if it's media coverage related to the Utes or the Pac-12 and you want us to talk about it, let us know. And that's what we're going to hit. So should be a good episode.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And apparently, Joseph's going to hit the fire
viciously
button.
Attack Larry Scott. And I've got a whole week to pull up some data and get this whole big thing going and give you guys a little closing statement. All right, guys, this was a blast, and I can't wait to be back next week. And
go Utes!